Out of salvation they ascend unto Zion's mountain, even unto Esau's mountain, for the judgment, that the kingdom may come to be for Jehovah. That concludes the book of Obadiah. It's the end of chapter 1, which is the only chapter of Obadiah, and that was verse 21 in the Ward Green version of 2003. And that's our daily scripture for today, little children. And we begin chapter 12 in our article, The Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express today, entitled The Ark Site. Part 2 of The Ark of Urartu began with chapter 7, which was part 2, that is, and we have now arrived at the beginning of chapter 12, which is the final chapter or the last chapter of this article. Chapter 12, The Ark Site. But first, at the beginning of this chapter, there is a map. And we can see the map on a separate page. It's completely filling the page. This is the full-size image. It doesn't scroll either direction, so this is the actual full-size image of this map. It's in eastern Turkey. Mount Ararat is up here at the top as labeled. And in the book of the Bible, in Genesis chapter 8, verse 4, it says the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Not the mountain, the mountains, plural. In the mountain range, in other words, of Ararat, the region of Ararat. And that's, in fact, where the ark was found. Down here on the map, near the bottom of this map, we see a green square, which is representing, as it's labeled, also, the ark. And just to the northwest of that, we see the town of Uzengili in Turkey. And we see that there were two drogue stones found northwest of Uzengili. Quite a significant distance, further than the distance between Uzengili and the Ark. The Ark landing site. But the Ark landing site, of course, was this small black square, which is roughly south or south-southeast of the ark site, because the ark slid down the mountain in a mudslide. And, well, actually, wait a minute now. The place of first descent. Yeah, the place of first descent is where the town of Nakhchivan was built, because the ark didn't slide down the mountain until much later. Centuries later, possibly, but certainly a long time afterwards. So the place of first descent is this tiny black makes for an editing nightmare if I do that, but Nakhchivan, the border with Iran is seen right down near the bottom of this green circle, which is a circle which has been drawn at just about the same, it's drawn with its center at the place of first descent, or Nakhchivan, the city which was built at the place of first descent. So the center is there at Nakhchivan. But the diameter, or the circumference rather, the perimeter, I should say, of this circle just about reaches as far as the drogue stones that were depicted northwest of the ark location, the current ark location, and the town of Uzengili. The drogue stones are northwest, and that's just about where, slightly southeast of those drogue stones, is where this green circle's perimeter goes. Now, David Deal, his work was done. Now, I noted here, I made this map in 2011, and Kazan and the anchor locations are approximated. I think Kazan is some place, it's not shown on the map, but I think it's someplace near the where the Drogue stones were found. Drogue stones being the anchors that were, they're dragged along. That's why they're called Drogue stones. They're dragged along, suspended in the water, behind and underneath the ship. But approximately from the work of this Kazan, and I note here that Kazan and anchor locations are approximated from the work of R.C. Mickelson and David Allen Deal, 1993 for R.C. Mickelson. But I gave David Deal a span of time at the bottom of the map, which is 1997 to 2011. But I say in the note above that Mr. Deal's work is not dated. The border with Iran lies near the Ark Landing site, near the bottom of the green circle. And the word Iran is shown there on the map. And the scale is shown. So there's about a distance of maybe, less than 5 miles between the place of first descent and the location of those two Drogue stones, which is considerably less than 10 kilometers also. So it's about perhaps a distance of 6 or 7 kilometers or 4 miles perhaps between the place of first descent, I'm estimating just by eye, and I'm not good at eyeballing that sort of thing, but I think it's roughly that. So all of it occurs within the space of about 5 miles as far as the locations shown on this map, not including the Iran border, but just from the place of first descent to the Drogue stones is about 5 miles or less, or let's say 5 times 1.6 would be 8 kilometers or less. 1.61 is what you multiply miles by to get kilometers, and 0.62 is what you multiply kilometers by to get miles. 0.62 times the number of kilometers equals the number of miles. So that's it for this map. Look at Dagubayazit. This other bigger town is northwest of Yuzangili by about 18 kilometers maybe. Or you could say 10 miles, roughly. 16 kilometers, 10 miles, something like that. So, there's Kazan. Look at, this is where in the top left, we see there are 12 Drogue stones that were found at what's called the Place of Eight, which is even further away from the Ark landing site than Dagubayazit is, and we have the Drogue stones there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 at least places marked for those, and the Place of Eight is a little gray square that might be, I'm wondering if that's the place where there was a town. I think that's a place of which is called the Place of Eight because maybe Noah lived there later after living in Nakhchivan. It's fascinating, but this is the work of R.C. Mickelson, 1993, these 12 Drogue stones, and the city of Kazan is also this same place called the Place of Eight, which is also called Arzap, and it's about, you'd have to say, if we said 16, it's about 30 kilometers. Well, let's go from the place of first descent. If it's, say, 17 or 18 kilometers from the place of first descent to Dagubayazit, then it's Dagubayazit, I should say, Maybe that's the correct, I doubt that's the correct pronunciation, but it's the best that I know about right now. So Dogubayazit is about, let's say, well, even if we said 20, could be, let's just round it off to 20 for now, and that would mean that from the place of first descent, the Drog stones are about 35 kilometers or so, or the city of Kazan, about 35 or 40 kilometers, which is about times 0.6 to 24 miles, 25 miles away. So 25 miles is where Kazan is from the place of first descent, as a rough estimate. And that's the place of eight, which might be where the town where the eight survivors lived. And that's perhaps why it's called the place of eight. And of course, the site of Noah's Ark is near Uzengili, Turkey, as the caption shows. It was a relief map from mapsforfree.com, upon which I built this explanatory map in 2011. Now, Chapter 11, the Ark site. Chapter 11, paragraph 1. Noah's Ark is universally recognized in all epochs. Quote, "For as were the days of Noah, so will the coming of the Son of Man be." For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Matthew 24, verse 37, from the English Standard Version. Jesus spoke these words, and he went on to explain that in the days of Noah, people took no note of impending disaster prior to the deluge, but they continued to marry or to be taken in marriage, eating and drinking as expected. For those of us who are dedicated Christians, the words of Jesus are more than sufficient to convince us of the truth of the event called the flood, or the deluge. But there are many aspects to this story that intrigue us. The history of man since Noah's day has variously recorded it, and leaves a deep impression that it is an epic event. This article may appear lengthy to some, but it appears to be less than one-hundredth of the story from what I know. As Christians, we believe that all mankind descended from a common ancestor, who was Adam, and later from a man, Noah. There is a beautiful simplicity in the idea that a massive destructive event erased the markings of prior life. As an apt historian might start, without prejudice, on 3282 BCE. Parameters of truth demarcate a simpler, more useful path. One example is Willard F. Libby, the founder or inventor of radiocarbon dating, who said that civilization was no older than 5,000 years. And that's exactly, almost exactly, the same as what our date for the deluge gives in terms of the total time from then till now. 32 or 3,000, let's say, plus 2,000, which is our current epoch in the Common Era. So 3,000 years before the Common Era to 2,000 years after is about 5,000 years. That agrees with Willard Libby also. We have already found the year 3282 BCE to be very useful, as that year is the year that the Ark became of use in our history of the Green family. Tying Adam, 5550 BCE, to the shipbuilding Rowe family, R-O-W-E, my grandmother's maiden name. The Rowe family, and my grandmother's name was Linda. She lived, having been born in 1900, until 1994. In locating the site of the Ark landing, along with the time of the deluge, as in the Chinese tradition of an ancient road, I owe many people a debt of gratitude, and in the spirit of instruction which has motivated me in my writing of this article. The same spirit as this, I now believe that the time is ripe for a return to the study of the Ark site itself, meaning using Gili, Turkey, for the purpose of a broader study of finding new leads or confirming previous work, but proceeding by the scientific method from the time of the Ark's landing onwards. In this way, we may discover something about the man Noah, his family, and the generations succeeding them, as to how they may have afterward spread abroad in the earth itself after the flood waters subsided, and they began to live on the earth again, when they made peace by the grace of God. That is the end of that paragraph 1 of chapter 12 of part 2 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. And that reminds me, the idea of grace, which is the undeserved kindness of God, and it's also called providence, and things that are given and provided by God, including this undeserved kindness, you know, other things too, like the fact that the sun rises every day and things like that. That's, of course, part of the grace of God too. But I had somehow, and it's very easy, forgotten about that idea about the grace. You need to remember the grace of God. Sometimes, at least I do, I need to remember it because it gives me the right focus. So, I mean, I thought about the word blessing, and I was thinking about blessings, right? But I forgot about the word grace and undeserved kindness. I mean, God gives blessings, but the biggest aspect of it, that what makes it a blessing, is because we're not deserving. We didn't do anything. Like, we didn't organize and, you know, orchestrate our own birth. That's not what happened. At least speaking for most of us, I think. It's true, we didn't orchestrate our own birth. I don't think there's anyone really who did. Not even Jesus did that. So, no one has done that. Nobody deserved to live. That was undeserved. Life is undeserved. It's just like a huge revelation sometimes to people, even though we sometimes feel worthless. That is, in fact, the way we actually are, in the sense that we didn't cause our own existence. So in that sense, we are only of worth in the sense that we were given this, and so we can't be of worth to ourselves so much as we can be of worth to others, to the Creator, the true Creator, the true God. We can be of use to Him, of worth to Him, but of use to Him too, perhaps, but we're of worth to Him. No matter how much use we are to Him, we have worth in the eyes of the true sovereign God. And that's the concept. But the concept is undeserved kindness that causes that intrinsic value being only in the eyes of God. I mean, we can call Him God. We can call Him God. But the problem with calling Him God is that there are many gods in the world. And even the devil is the god of the world. So calling Him God doesn't do justice to the true God. The true God is Jehovah. He's got a real name, a personal name, Jehovah. And His son is Jesus, who's also Michael the Archangel, as a heavenly angel. But we have all this undeserved kindness. It's so much undeserved kindness. Somebody once said, I mean, many people have said it to me, I guess, but count your blessings. And that is the idea of, you know, being aware. Count your undeserved kindness as well. You know, be aware of your undeserved kindness. Be aware of what you've been given for nothing. Like what was given to you freely. Be aware of all those things. I mean, one thing comes to mind. The internet was given to us. I mean, that's very undeserved. And it was a phenomenal thing, but we shouldn't think that was brought about by some human power alone, because it couldn't have been. Because there had to have been a lot of other things provided to the humans, including life itself, in order for them to have given you know, given life to the internet, in a sense, given existence to the internet, using technology that also had to be given to them, or the elements that were used to create the technology had to be given them. And all these things, in fact, meant much of the technology that we're using wasn't even created by humans originally. It came from extraterrestrial spacecraft that had been crashed on Earth, and they discovered those craft, and they used reverse engineering, and they invented the transistor. And that was said to have come about through the discovery of these crashed alien spacecraft. And so there may be really very little of our technology that we invented ourselves. It's not really that important, because all of it had to come from an original source, ultimately. Like, everything, you'd say, well, okay, it came from extraterrestrials, but where did they get it? You know, and where did they get that, and where did they get that, and where did they get that? It keeps going back. So saying that human life, even human life, by some people, is said to have come from aliens, but if it came from aliens, where did they get it? So, I mean, you have to keep going back until you finally say, and we don't think it did come from aliens. We don't necessarily have to think that, because the Bible says God created Adam from the dust of the earth. So the word Adam even means something like the dust of the earth or something. Let's see what it means. What does the word Adam mean? We've got time, I think, to look it up. We've got a lot of time today. Yeah, we've got a ton of time. Okay. So let's find out what the word Adam means. And if I want to open this application on the other page, I have to open it using a different application, because the format of the displays will not allow it to be displayed on both of my screens. If they use a different display format, it will just jumble it, and I can't display it. So that's why I'm looking at it over here. But this is DOSBox X. Let's see, what's that? DOSBox X. Is that the one? I'm not sure what that is. I'm using DOSBox to run this program, but I might be running the other version of the Insight book under a different thing that's called DOSBox X. I'm not sure, but let's look up Adam. And then we can put Adam inside these piping lines. So there's a pipe, and then there's the word IN for Insight, then another pipe, and then that indicates that the IN being inside the two pipes means we're searching the Insight books. And then we go to putting the word Adam inside two pipes after that. So we have pipe, IN, pipe, pipe, Adam, pipe. Search, and it will find that it actually finds Adam. It means earthling man, humankind. Earthling man. Yeah, the word damn, that's right, is it means blood, too. So there's the idea of red is in the name Adam, because blood is red. Human blood is red. That's in the word Adam. I thought there was something about red earth in the name Adam. But yes, earthling man. See, so he's created from the earth. That's why earthling man, right? Not just living on earth, but created from the earth. It's from a root meaning red. That's right. The word Adam is from a root meaning red. That's what the Insight book tells me. Now maybe I can copy this. Can I? Possibly? I don't know. Let's see. How do we copy? I'm not sure if this is an old DOS program, so I'm not sure how I can copy this exactly. I can't right click on it. I'm pretty sure of that. And I don't think I go Control C. But I'm not sure. See if I can paste it somewhere. Let's go to McVim. Doesn't work. Okay. What else can I do? Search, go to options, highlight. I think there's a way to save it. but you know, save it to a file or something. Well, let's try something else. So I know I can't drag it over because it will destroy it. What if I run this? This is maybe the other one. Let's see. Allow? This might be it. Yes, excellent. So the other one is just called DOSBox X. It's the other version of Insight that runs on this particular computer screen, which is a MacBook Pro, actually. So anyway, if I go tab-tab, that's not tab-tab, tab-tab, I get to the Insight book, press Enter, then I press spacebar to search the Insight book. Now there's pipe, ion pipe. Now I type pipe, atom, pipe. This is the program that was written in DOS called NWTIN, which is New World Translation Insight Book, abbreviated. It's a DOS program. So this came up with Adam, earthly man, mankind, humankind, from a root meaning, quote-unquote, red. The Hebrew word occurs as man, mankind, or earthly man, over 560 times in the scriptures, and is applied to individuals and mankind in general. It is also used as a proper name, that is, the word or name, Adam. God said, let us make man in our image, Genesis 1 and 26. So that is the Insight book that we can refer to, and just did, which is a DOS program which may not be available any longer. But I had gotten it sometime around 1988, when the Insight book was published in 1988. That particular edition. So, the Ark site. We have done this chapter. What else do we want to talk? Let me put this stuff in the background because it's too bright. Let's see. Let's close that. There we go. Much better. Okay. So Obadiah, we've studied that. Let's see what it says at the end of Obadiah in Clark's commentary. Do we have Clark's commentary here? Trying to see. Oh, yes, I want to look at this. Yeah, I talked about the Chinese the other day. The accents used, and the accent is Karen. It's the descending and then ascending, concave, upward-facing, bowl-shaped accent, which is called the third tone in Chinese. And it's Karen. Not circumflex, which is the opposite, with it being convex on top. This is concave on top, this accent, and it's called Karen. I wanted to mention that, and I've been forgetting to mention it some other days previous to this. So the first one is there's one called Macron, which is the straight line, which is the high-pitched even tone, the first tone it is. Then there's the accent. This is the Chinese diacritic system used to show the pronunciation of the Chinese in Chinese pinyin, which is the English translated or English phonetic version of Chinese. So the second tone is the acute accent, the rising tone, or the second tone, and the Karen is the third tone, and the grave accent, which is in French grave, is the descending accent for the fourth tone. Those are the one, two, three, there's four, obviously. Four tones. Didn't even have to count them. Okay. What's this? What's this telling me here? What happened? Why is there there's an advertisement at the end here? Okay, so we go to Obadiah. Did we actually do this? I'm trying to think. Did I save this? Do we have Bible Hub here? What's that? I need to take care of an itchy or runny nose here. What else? See, what's that? Well, that's one of the Chinese dictionaries, right? Yeah, it's a beautiful Chinese dictionary. It's at mdbg.net. mdbg.net, four letters prior to the .net. It's quite a useful Chinese dictionary, actually. You can look at look up Chinese either in Pinyin or English, according to this. But you can also look it up. Yeah, Chinese as well. You can look up the Chinese or the Pinyin or the English. It's quite a beautiful dictionary. There we saw that I looked up this word, Fu, right? And we found out it was part of the name of the emperor Fuxi. Fuxi? It's pronounced Fuxi. Rising and then even tone. Fuxi. And the Fu part of the name meant to lean over, to fall down, to hide in ambush, to conceal oneself, to lie low, the hottest days of summer, to submit, to concede defeat, to overcome, to subdue, or a volt. It means also the volt, I guess, the electrical unit. The volt, by the way, pressures in pressure units, the Pascal is the unit of pressure that we use, like kilopascals, right? 101 kilopascals or whatever they're talking about, to do with the atmospheric pressure. So Pascal is the unit of pressure. Volt is the unit of voltage or electromotive force in an electric circuit, right? The ampere, or ampere as it's spelled, the amp, we call it the ampere. Amp is a unit of current, the flow of electrical current. And we know that the current times the resistance in ohms, O-H-M, ohm, current times resistance is equal to voltage, electromotive force. So V equals IR. It's the way of writing that. Voltage equals current times resistance, with I being the current, R being the resistance in ohms. We have just about run out of time, quite conveniently. Wasn't that wonderful with the addition of the Insight book to our study there? And the name Adam being elucidated there. Then when I escape that, I press escape, and X, enter, is how I exit, because I've got a batch file that when I type X, enter, it uses the command exit in DOS. That's it, though, for today. It's January 12th, 2025 of the Common Era. It's a new year, isn't it? And this is 2031 hours, Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And thank you so much for listening and watching. In my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star. And they are saying bye for now. That was Chapter 12, Paragraph 1, the Arksight chapter of the Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express, what we studied today. And we finished the Book of Obadiah today also. We have about 15 more seconds to go in today's study. And yeah, I've been gargling with xylitol every night to just to prevent and ward off strep throat, and I think it seems to work perfectly, but